Welcome to Continued Success, your weekly Friday afternoon Phillies therapy appointment. I'm Justin Clue. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin_Clue. With me is Liz Rocher. You can follow her at Liz Rocher. She is of Yahoo Sports. Good afternoon, Liz.
Good afternoon, Justin.
Boy,
and
we are talking.
Isn't it a fine afternoon?
We are talking about the Phillies at this time of year more so than I think, like the nation is talking about the Phillies more so this time of year than in 10 years. I got some juice.
I
don't know about you. I'm juiced up.
I'm ready.
About it.
Everyone is talking about it, and some people I wish would stop, but.
I think that's, yeah, that'd be a good name for this podcast.
Please stop.
Well, obviously, it's baseball MLB awards season, so on a somewhat nightly basis now, until last night, we've been gifted with the revelation of who has won each of baseball's many prestigious awards. We have Rookie of the Year, Manager of the Year, Cy Young, MVP. And it's been some colorful debates. I will certainly say that. And people are mad.
People are fucking turnt about this. They are worked up.
But that's how you know they're alive, you know?
Yes.
And that's what I mean right now. That, like, yeah, this is a conversation that you know, we're ready. You know, again, just another indication that we are ready for the Phillies to be a team again.
Relevant.
And not just standing around in red pinstripes accomplishing nothing. It's I can't say that a single player's individual award really hits home for me. I did feel a little like, oh, yay, when I saw that Bryce Harper did win MVP. I was like, oh, cool. But before we even talk about that, we got to back up, talk about some other awards. Yes, we're going to talk, Liz. And I didn't tell you we were going to talk about this before.
I knew you were going to bring it up. No matter what you say, you can't stay away from this. Both of us, we say, no, we're never talking about it again. We hate it. We hate him. We don't ever want to hear about him. We want him to go away. Doesn't matter. We're always going to talk about it. Always.
I will. In my defense, I have a larger point to make about the Phillies.
Do you?
Yes, in this case. We are, of course, talking about your National League Manager of the Year, Gabe Kapler. Who won the American League?
I don't know. Hold on.
Gabe Kapler was up against at least one guy who didn't even have his managing job anymore. So I'm
That's
not saying
brilliant.
it was easy, but no. But I think he was the obvious choice and the clear front runner going into it. You know, and the debate around this just obviously, inevitably, as you and I projected and predicted many times. That this, of course, stirred up the Gabe Kapler conversation in Philadelphia. And you know, I was seeing on, like, various Philly sites and stuff that, like, that he won by itself was still considered a story. It's still considered, like, a Philly's story. And I do wish that that kind of would end. Like, I get that he was the manager here, did poorly, was a bad manager, then went to San Francisco, found out about talking to humans. Apparently wasn't aware of that he could do that, and became the communications professional that we were assured he was when he was in Philadelphia. But anyway, I digress. The point is, Gabe Kapler won Manager of the Year. The Good Fight Twitter account mentioned, like, hey, you know what? He found his niche. You know, he excelled. He was not good here. Let's move
Honestly,
on.
Honestly, I can't help but think the same thing.
Yeah.
It's not like that statement is wrong.
But you know what? People were pissed that they said that. People were so mad about the phrase specifically, found his niche. And I don't understand that. That's what happened. He found a job.
He did.
More suited for him specifically and excelled in that job. He found his niche. That's what he did.
He found his niche on a team that would buy into his whatever bullshit. Because the Phillies certainly didn't do that. That was a big problem. I don't think there was a lot of buy-in on Kapler's message. The Giants were ready to buy in. The staff was completely behind him. From what we know, the Giants aren't a giant mess on internal player development. There aren't, like, warring factions anywhere in there. And San Francisco might be the perfect place for him. That
Indeed.
Obnoxious city. I feel as if it's the perfect place for him. Like, it as soon as he got that job, like, this is where he belongs. He belongs there. And
yeah,
I think
with
both
his
of
friend
us said,
who hired him.
Yes.
In a deeply vain city that's all about appearances.
Yep.
Yeah. He's going to thrive completely. There. And with like, he's got that like tech bro analytics and baseball overlap. Mm-hmm. Like that's, it's perfect. It's perfect.
It is. It's perfect. I think you and I, when he was originally hired, we should go back and listen. We're not going to, but I think we both said that it was going to work out well.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
It was obvious. It was
we would have said that about anybody.
Yeah, that's,
we would have found the reason why Buck Showalter was the right manager at the time for the Philly. Like, that's the thing. When you bring in a manager, especially one with no experience, you're like, well, I have no idea how to measure this, but what we do know is, you know, what's out there, and we can, you know, make jokes about how in shape he is and like how good looking he is, and that he like used to spit ice cream out instead of eat it. Like, this is all, and Howard Eskin ran with all the stuff from his blog. Like, that's, that was it. That was us basically accepting him, because what other choice did we have? We were going to say, oh, he's going to be bad for this reason. We didn't have any reasons. Like, maybe you could have said inexperience, but, and that wound up being one of the reasons why he sucked. But still, yeah, of course we said he was going to do well.
Well, I meant when he was hired by the Giants.
Oh!
That they thought, oh, I think oh, at the oh, time oh. when we
You let
when
me
he was
do
hired,
that whole thing just there, and I was totally
I didn't want to interrupt you. You were on You were on a tear. You were on a roll. I'm not stopping that. That's rude.
I'm caffeinated this afternoon.
Oh, great. I couldn't tell. I meant that when he was hired by the Giants, I think we both said, this makes sense. Not only was he hired by his friend, but the whole thing. It's like he's a puzzle piece that was missing from them. And obviously that's right, because it took him two seasons to, you know, get them to the playoffs when they're just essentially garbage put together in the shape of a team.
Yep. Yeah. So it's not surprising that it's working out there for old Gabe. But my bigger point that I brought this up for was that after that milestone, I'll say, story from Matt Gelb in The Athletic that we talked about a couple weeks ago that characterized the Phillies player development system as dysfunctional. A lot of ideas, a lot of like holdovers from various regimes still warring within the organization, and the obvious result being chaos at the actual player level, and probably being the central reason why this team hasn't really managed to get its shit together for the last, I mean, I'll just say last 3 or 4 years when they were supposed to be entering a contention window and not just rebuilding. And I think that reframed the Gabe Kapler narrative a bit, but even before that, I think it was out there that Gabe Kapler wasn't the only problem. He was a problem, but he wasn't the only problem. And I think this solidified that story from Gelb, that the Phillies have a broken system. Part of that broken system, when it was being built, was bringing in Gabe Kapler to oversee the day-to-day in the dugout. This is something he agreed to do. This is something he wanted to do and felt he could do. So he was certainly a part of that. Gabe Kapler wasn't standing there going, whoa, 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 Matt Glendek, this is all wrong. We got to do it this other way. No, he bought into the system that was characterized as dysfunctional. That's, I think, undeniable. Like, that's why he was here. That's why Matt Glendek hired him. I'm seeing stuff out there now that's just blatantly untrue. Like one guy going, well, Gabe Kapler didn't work here because they didn't let him hire his own coaches.
Oh my God.
Bruh. Rick Kranitz got let go and paved the way for the Braves World Series title because they opted to go with Gabe Kapler's guy, Chris Young. And the same Chris Young who, in that Megan Montemuro story, watched along with Gabe Kapler as, like, you know, the printout said Aaron Nola should throw this pitch in this situation. Aaron Nola threw the pitch and the Nationals hitter crushed it for a home run. And it was like, you know, the billionth time that had happened that season. And Chris Young is like yelling at the umpire out of frustration because he knows, oh, crap, we have this system and it's just not working. So, you know, that and along, like, they brought in Driveline, like they made that huge analytic push, which again was all part of this system that they just built wrong and that Gabe Kapler was a huge part of. So, again, my bigger point here is, Liz, we've also in the last few days seen the Phillies make a flurry of hires, starting with like at the coaching level with Kevin Long, the new hitting coach, and Bobby Dickerson, the new infield coach, Jason Camilli, the new major league assistant hitting coach. Then the more high-profile stuff like Anirudh Kalambi becoming in as a assistant GM, Preston Mattingly being the new farm director. Now we have Brian Kaplan. He was hired to be the Major League Assistant Pitching Coach and Director of Pitching Development, and even Howie Kendrick, a special assistant to the GM. And then like lower level stuff, like, or less high profile stuff, like Morgan Gregory is the new director of strength and conditioning. They have a new assistant strength and conditioning coach. They have a new medical operations liaison. Is this a lot of new hire? Like, some of these I think are hires that probably take place and maybe you just miss it during the course of the season. Like, I don't think it gets televised when a new medical operations liaison is hired for a baseball team. But nonetheless, this seems like a lot of hires. And it feels like this is Dave Dombrowski trying to fix the system at its core. You know, trying to fix the dysfunction. At the very least, all these guys have in common that they were hired by the same person who has an idea of what he wants to do, of what he wants the organization to be. And is that not itself, even if you're not encouraged by the individual hires, which a lot of people are in many cases, Howie Kendrick, everybody was very excited to see. Colombi came from the Rays. Everybody was very excited about that. Preston Mattingly got glowing recommendations from national media members. So I guess what I'm saying is the issues that Gabe Kapler became the face of before he was fired and that lingered after he was gone, do you feel encouraged at all that these hires are being made right now and are essentially probably more important to the Phillies than, you know, signing Kyle Schwarber or whatever?
Oh, I totally agree with that. Fixing all of those problems is very important. It's very important. I mean, I think some of these might be entirely new positions, too. Like, I think some of these have been created, which is good. The entire, from what we could tell, just by report, the entire internal baseball operations system, or at least the vast majority of it, needed to be redone. It needed to be taken down to the drywall and built back up. And I'm glad. I trust Dave Dombrowski to do that because he hasn't fucked up yet. So until he does, I'm encouraged by it. I'm glad that they're hiring a lot of people. You know, let's bring in a lot of people. Let's bring in people with different viewpoints. Let's bring in people that were not hired or who have ever spoken to Matt Klentak or Eddie McPhail. Maybe they don't even know about their existence, period. And I think that's better for everyone.
And that's what I mean when I say I think it's good that so many of these guys and everybody's being hired in these critical roles are all being hired by the same person with the same plan, because dysfunction comes from people who are, you know, getting different directives.
At maybe we're hired by different.
Right. And it's going to cause a lot of confusion. In this case, even before we know whether or not any of these jobs, any of these guys are going to work out, at least they're all being hired as part of the same blueprint. And I think that solves your dysfunction issue, or goes a long way in correcting it. Then when you get down to the individual stuff, I mean, Kevin Long has a wonderful reputation. And even in an indirect and humorous way signaled that the Phillies were like interested in signing Kyle Schwarber, someone who credits Kevin Long with getting his swing on track. And somebody as influential as a new farm director, somewhere where the Phillies are in desperate need of more help.
And they hired a new a plan. That's what they need.
Exactly. I mean, it's another young, unproven person there. But again, someone with if you ask national baseball writers, has a sparkling reputation. And Howie Kendrick. I mean, Howie Kendrick said in an interview on MLB Network that he said he's going to be around. His job is going to be like around the guys, around them, help them understand what he said, who they are, guys in the majors, guys in the minors. He talked about how when he was coming up with the Angels, Tim Salmon and Torrey Hunter served in a similar role for him. Guys who just kind of taught him how to be his major league self. And as he got older, as a player, he transitioned into that role for younger guys. And he's looking forward to replicating that experience in the Phillies organization as special assistant to the GM. So, I mean, that is very, I mean, Kendrick is another guy who has a wonderful reputation everywhere. I mean, people in Philadelphia love Howie Kendrick. He was here for part of one season, I'm pretty sure.
Two seasons. Like, I think he was here for two seasons, I believe. And he was injured for most of both. But when he wasn't injured, he was incredible. He was great at the plate, which is why people still love him.
Yeah, he was part of that game where the Phillies clobbered Jeremy Guthrie into retirement.
Like, on his
literally
birthday.
The next day. On his birthday. That poor man.
Let's never forget that.
So I guess when I say I've got some juice, I guess it comes from the fact that not only do the Phillies have the most valuable player in the National League currently, they have a lot of hires that seem to be correcting the problems that are at their core that have, that I think have prevented them from taking that next step forward. Will they now take that next step forward? I don't know. It remains to be seen. These people were largely just hired, but it's an attempt to correct that. And that in itself is encouraging. It is discouraging that I feel like I've said this before, you know, a couple years ago, I was like, well, they're doing something more than nothing. And that means, you know, that invites change. And that is good. I know we've said that before, but in this case, you know, now it's happening again. It's, they ran into another wall and they're trying to build up a staff to get around it again. And I do think I am encouraged by that. And especially by some of the particular people they hired, like Kendrick, like Colombi, like Mattingly, like Dickerson, like Long, like, I'm very encouraged by these hires and the reaction to them. Now all we can see is all we can do is see how they play out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm encouraged, of course, as well. And one thing that I like about the Phillies that not a lot of other teams, I'll take the Twins for example, not a lot of other teams have done is they do keep running into walls, but they have been getting back up and trying again. And I appreciate that. Instead of just curling up and dying, you know, and just kind of throwing everything away, I think the Twins are about to implode their entire, because things have not worked out well, I think now for two seasons in a row. And every time they get to the playoffs, they get their asses kicked by the Yankees. And it's got to be demoralizing. And it's been demoralizing for us. But the Phillies are determined to make something out of what they have. And, you know, you can't go back in time and fix what Matt Klentak and Andy McPhail fucked up. You can't do that. So they're just picking up the pieces and moving forward. And I'm encouraged that they're not going the other route and just, I mean, they've got the MVP. Bryce Harper's value has never been higher. In a different world, the Phillies are like, well, obviously we're not going to make the playoffs ever. So let's just blow everything up and start again. Everything is too badly ruined. Everything, the mattress is too gross. We have to just get rid of it. Instead, they're putting a couple of plastic covers on it, some sheets, and trying again. And I appreciate that they're doing that. I hate that that's where the bar is. That I'm glad that the Phillies are continuing to try, but that's where the bar is. And I think let's just be happy that they're clearing it.
It does make you wonder what the goal was in hiring Andy McPhail. I mean, sure, you can say, well, the goal was to like get better, rebuild, and win the World Series. Okay, sure. But like, what specifically the motivation was for Andy McPhail to be here? And like, honestly, I at this point in this process, with how much has gone wrong thus far, I'm just kind of stuck with the idea that Middleton hired McPhail because he'd like heard of him.
And that, he worked for
a couple of teams. And
yeah, he had a big part or was, you know, the architect of a championship team. And that, I think, no matter how long ago it was, John Middleton is a surface enough human. He just cares about the surface that is what led him to interview him. And since he already knew what he had done, everything that he said sounded great to him, because I think he's a man who waits to be filled with someone else's opinions.
Yeah. And we were excited. And back then we were excited because Andy McPhail mentioned sabermetrics in his first press conference. And the Phillies were so far behind that we were like, yay, now we're at the party too. Hooray.
Everyone's getting ready to leave, but all the beer is gone.
The cops all you've are
got
here.
Is the but... all you've got is the Riunini Lambrusco wine. You know, the giant jug of barely sparkling wine that costs $5 at the grocery store.
The Francia bag has been sucked mostly dry.
Yes.
But there's a little left.
Exactly.
Laying on the floor.
That's kind of what the Phillies have been working with the last few years. That's what has happened. They've been playing catch up so bad, they've been trying to shortcut the process. And you can't. You got to drink all the wine. That's the only way you get drunk. This makes sense. I swear to God.
This podcast couldn't be more evident that this podcast gets recorded on a Friday afternoon.
Completely. It's our own happy hour.
I'll mention is real quick, Brian Kaplan. We don't know too much about him yet, but he is he was hired to be the Major League Assistant Pitching Coach and Director of Pitching Development. He comes from the Cressy Sports Performance company in Florida. He apparently, according to his profile on their website, takes a particular interest in long-term development of younger players. He himself is an International Youth Conditioning Association certified high school strength and conditioning coach. I'll be honest. When I saw that, I thought it was going to be an award, but it wasn't. It was just his title. All right. But anyway, hey, whatever. He specializes in developing younger players, and that's definitely an area where the Phillies need to improve as well. So it remains to be seen how successful these hires will be. But at the moment, I will say, I will admit that I, Justin Clue, am encouraged that this many hires have been made, and in a couple of particular cases, you've reason to find individual hires rather encouraging as well.
Yeah. One thing I want to say about that, though. Can I have one last thing to say? We should all pay attention to, if they ever speak to the media, if their jobs are ever spoken about, let's pay attention to what they do, what they say, how they're running things, because this is going to be the blueprint laying the foundation for the next coach who will be coming in after Joe Girardi's contract does not get renewed. Because it couldn't be clearer at this point that Dombrowski wants to bring in his own guys. He has either added jobs or replaced people all over the place. He is making this team his own, and Joe Girardi was not his pick. It was the last administration's compromise pick. And so there's a reason he hasn't worked out, because he was no one's first choice for who they wanted, for good reason, as he has demonstrated. And so we should all keep an eye out and see who we think, who is coaching now, who might get fired, hitting coaches, whatever, who might be our next coach. Let's find our next manager. Let's find out. Man, Dave Dombrowski has done a lot of stuff. He's done a lot of good baseball stuff.
He's a Hall of Famer.
I know. It's very,
Oh, no, he was with the Tigers. Yeah, I thought so. I remember because his name is two D's and Detroit's logo is a D. That's literally why I remembered that in my head. Yeah, he was with the Tigers for 13 years. Okay. Yeah, I'm not crazy.
No, you're not.
I keep thinking I'm crazy. John and I were like, I told John Josh Harrison played for the Phillies and he was like, did he? And then I looked it up. I was like, oh, no, like it's not listed among his major league teams. So I guess I just put him on my team in the show and thought that he did. And then like 5 minutes later, people were like, no, yeah, they brought him in like to spring training. I was like, yeah, see, I'm not crazy. I got to stop thinking I'm crazy.
Justin, you got to trust yourself more. You got to have more confidence in yourself. It's really a problem when we've all noticed it.
We're all talking about it when you're not looking. Is that helping your confidence? All right. Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about the even more joyful Phillies news that a Phillies player won the National League MVP. And we'll let you know who it was right after this break. All right. And we're back to talk about, Bryce Harper winning the National League MVP award. Zach Wheeler not winning the National League Cy Young award. He finished second behind Corbin Burnes of the Brewers. Let's hit on that first. Wheeler not being named the NL Cy Young winner, not really a surprise to me. You know, I felt like he had a decent chance, but wasn't the front runner. Where were you on that?
Oh, I completely agreed. I thought I had it all backwards. I thought Wheeler was coming in third. I thought Scherzer was coming in first and Burnes was coming in second. That was my prediction. And in no way did that come true. I got totally shocked.
Yeah, I think I would have gone Scherzer, Wheeler, Burnes. But, I didn't factor in how incredible Corbin Burnes' StatCast page is. We're going to hit real quick on the little boy in a sailor costume who voted... who gave Zach Wheeler a fifth place NL Cy Young vote. A young man from the Cincinnati Inquirer who I think is spread a little thin covering both the Reds and the Bengals, because that's the state of journalism at this point. They got to bring in somebody to cover both teams. And this was our first taste of essentially what this discourse was going to be like. I think because it's been so long since a Phillies player has been involved in either of these conversations, and now we had both, that we weren't used to having levels of vitriol and arguments on the same level as like a Hall of Fame ballot discussion at this point in the year. I was like, oh crap, that's right. This is going to get really nasty because votes are stupid and ballots are often, there's always a couple of people who are like, this is about me. This is about my vote. I'm interesting. And I didn't do it the way you thought I would. And basically when it came down to it in the NL Cy Young, I think people were enamored by Corbin Burns, who was the winner, and what he was able to achieve this season. And you know what? Corbin Burns had an incredible season.
Yes,
it was incredible. The main talking point you saw was that he simply just did not pitch as many innings as Zach Wheeler. And you know, I know we don't use ERA as the end all be all, but basically it came down to these guys have pretty similar ERAs. Wheeler's is like half a point higher. But he pitched in, what, like 50 more innings? Like he had a significant number of more innings. And Corbin Burns threw 167 innings this year to a 243 ERA. Zach Wheeler was like a little, he just had more exposure. And I think this guy, his name is Charlie Goldsmith from the Cincinnati Inquirer, he was saying that like when the numbers are like, when you're on the same tier, innings pitched wasn't really a statistic he was using as a metric. And he used the phrase, Corbin Burns' StatCast page is incredible, which I couldn't stop laughing at. Like, that was...
That's the thing that just someone meant, actually said. Someone actually said that as a defense for what they did.
That just meant to me that he didn't really see a whole lot of Corbin Burns pitching in 2021.
Mm-hmm, completely.
And went to his StatCast page mostly to fuel his vote. So, I mean, it was what it was, but it was kind of a sneak preview at the even louder debate that happened with the MVP vote. But, yeah, I mean, what was just to close the loop on this? I mean, what was your general take on the Cy Young vote? Did you think, like... Yeah, this is a crime against Zach Wheeler. I mean, as far as like the top three go, I don't think Zach Wheeler, you know, again, I didn't really expect him to win, but that somebody gave him a fifth placed vote behind, you know,
that is absolute horseshit. That's what that is. I didn't see Zach Wheeler do enough. I didn't bother looking at anything. I didn't bother giving this a second of critical thought. What am I supposed to do? I have an MVP ballot and a Manager of the Year ballot and a Rookie of the Year ballot to complete. I'm just one man. I'm going to fuck up somewhere. And that's where he chose to fuck up. And then he had to defend it like a baby. Like, don't do that. Writers, don't do that. Just vote and shut up. You're not obligated to look at Twitter. Just don't do it.
His ballot was Corbin Burns, Max Scherzer, Walker Buehler,
no.
Brandon Woodruff,
no.
Then Zach Wheeler. His explanation, at least on Twitter, if he wrote like a whole article or something about it, I didn't read it. But his explanation on Twitter was, even though he didn't throw as many innings, Corbin Burns was the best pitcher in the NL this season. His StatCast page is incredible. I can't say that without laughing.
Wait.
There's more. His pitches, especially the cutter, are so tough to hit. His stats were great. Burns had a really complete 2021 season. His stats were great.
I can't.
Awesome.
I couldn't get away with writing that in anything.
No.
In anything that I write professionally. I couldn't. His stats were great. Like,
Which stats were great, Charlie? What did you like? Like, name some specifics. Name five stats.
Name three. Name two. You don't need a whole lot. Like, for a thing like this, yes, maybe name a few more. But, like, I can say in an article, his stats were great, comma, especially blah, which is blah. Like, that's not the end of the sentence. He's forgotten the rest of the sentence. He's too lazy to put the rest of it on there. It's the laziness is what bothers me, and I get criticized for what I do. And this guy is a beat writer and got to write that on and as an explanation.
It does feel very lazy. That's true. Yeah, that is again. I'm not like I'm not broken down by it, but it is very entertaining. And it gives Philly fans somebody to pile on, which isn't always the war crime it's made out to be. Like, sometimes it's just a fun afternoon. And people in Philadelphia who are on Twitter and follow sports are at times some of the most creative and hilarious writers possible. So, like, that was a lot of fun.
Like, this is a victimless crime. So, yeah, right. it really was. Just, this is why Philly Twitter is very famous, because I feel it's on the strength of our ability to insult people in a way no one else will think of.
Well, let's move on to the National League MVP vote, which certainly ended the way that I think everybody in Philadelphia wanted it to go. Bryce Harper took the award. He had the support of both Philly representatives on the ballot, both
Shocking.
Jim Salisbury of NBC Sports Philly and Matt Breen of The Inquirer. They both put Harper, they gave him a first place vote. Salisbury had Turner second. Matt Breen had Juan Soto second. Followed a pretty typical pattern for the most part among most writers, but obviously, there were a couple of voters that stood out, I think, from the pack. Salisbury being one of them on the national level. Like, I mean, I gotta say, we do a Phillies podcast. Obviously, I think it's funny that it appears, in my opinion, what Jim Salisbury did by putting Juan Soto seventh and Fernando Tatis Jr. sixth on his ballot. Both were, like, far lower than any other writer had them. What I assume and think he did was put them low so that Harper has a better shot of winning, since those were the top three candidates. He wrote a whole explainer today, I think he never said that was the case.
And no.
He basically just kind of talked about each of the people from like 1 to 7 that he voted for. He didn't really explain why they were in the specific spot they were in, other than like Harper being number one. So it didn't really serve as like a, whoa, everyone calm down. There was a reason for all this. Somehow this didn't calm people down. And this, of course, evolved into there was a couple high horses being ridden, I guess you could say. The argument that Salisbury and then Corey Seidman at NBC Sports Philly seemed to be making on Twitter was that Salisbury was being chastised for having a different opinion than other people. They went full, like, broad with it. Like, they went all the way, this is a free speech issue. You just don't like him because his opinion's different. No, it's more that his opinion is inexplicably different. And even his explainer didn't really clear up why that was the case. And again, I don't care. I think it's funny because I'm biased because I'm a Phillies fan. So
yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can't deny that, like, come on, man, people are gonna raise their eyebrows about this one.
Yeah, and I don't understand why writers are loath to admit that in any way they might have bias, but they cover one team all year. They know those guys better than anyone else. They know them as humans and not just players. While the rest of, you know, the vast majority of baseball for the rest of them are just players. So of course you're gonna be biased. Like, look at the Baggerly and Slusser beat writers for the Giants. Look at their ballots.
I was
going to
bring that up. Yeah.
They're bonkers. They're absolutely they're certifiable. And
if they even bothered to try and explain with an article, I didn't see it. Like, they have been radio silent about that. And their ballots look like a couple of super Giants super fans got on the ballot and were like, Brandon Crawford, yay!
Absolute. It's hard.
They aren't the only ones to vote for Crawford number one, for the record.
Oh really? I'm shocked.
Slusser, I think he got four first place votes. One from Scott Miller, who represents the San Diego chapter, and another one from Rick Hummel, who represents the St. Louis chapter. But Slusser's ballot was particularly of note because she had Harper fifth and Soto sixth. So, another one that raised a lot of questions that we're never going to have answered, because I think the answer is just, I cover Brandon Crawford. I formed an attachment to him. I want him to have this award, or at least know that I supported him. I think that's good.
And
they
would
act, if you brought
that
up, they would grasp their pearls and, you know, gasp and drop whatever they were holding and act like that was some kind of journalistic malpractice. But clearly to me, that's what you're doing, and any explanation to explain otherwise, I don't see it.
No. Like, this is true everywhere. Like, there's some beat writers who are able to detach their, you know, their feelings about the team, but some aren't. Like, Jim Salisbury's covered the Phillies since God was in short pants. He's been around forever. And, you know, he, of course, is going to be a guy that does that, but will just not be able to admit it. Because I feel like if you do it, admit it. If you don't, you get to stay quiet. But you know what? I, at the very least, the Giants writers are not responding. You don't have to justify your ballot. It's obvious. Yeah. It's obvious what you're doing.
That's true.
It's obvious. Do not get into the game of doing that, because unless you're going to tell the truth that you know, or if you just are in denial and you don't, you know, you can't even recognize you're doing this, don't do it. It's really unnecessary. It's only going to get you into trouble, as it has Salisbury, because that's
trouble. Yeah. Trouble with Twitter for a day or two, and then everyone will forget.
Absolutely.
Like,
come on.
That's not even real trouble.
No, but you know what? He won't enjoy himself for those 2 days. He feels indignant that people are questioning him, and he's not used to people from outside of this sphere taking notice. Most of the beats aren't.
By the way, Slusser is the only one to give Buster Posey a vote. He was 10th on her ballot. And I believe Andrew Baggerly was the only one to give Lamont Wade Jr. a vote, who is also a Giants player. And Kevin Gausman also got a vote somewhere. Who voted for Kevin Gausman to win the MVP? Giants player Kevin Gausman. I don't think it was either of the Giants writers. So the Giants were just that cute little fun team that people just wanted to be like, I supported you, Giants. You're the best, Giants. We love you.
God.
I don't want to talk about this too much, because Chris and I are gonna
really get into it.
Go fully unhinged on this.
I can't wait.
I'm sure in our next episode of Absolutely Hammered. But boy, were Braves fans just not okay, despite winning the World Series, about Austin Riley not being considered a front runner, about not really, you know, obviously he didn't win anything. Like, they were not pleased with that. And it went back and forth. They were either saying like, oh, you're happy Bryce Harper won? Well, guess what? He didn't win the World Series, and I'll take that, to, well, Austin Riley deserved to win the MVP. Like, they had both sides covered. They had like a dingus little dipshit response for no matter what side of the argument you wanted to come at them with. And the thing I come back to is, you guys should still be too hungover to tweet.
Yeah, they don't know how to do it right. They're not doing it right. They haven't won. Like, if it had been the Phillies, we wouldn't be doing this. We'd still be drinking.
If they said, the Phillies will win the World Series next year if they never have an MVP in the National League again.
Fine. I'll take it.
Cool.
That anger is future Liz's problem. That's future whoever's problem, because I still won't care.
That doesn't mean they won't have good players. That doesn't mean they won't have players worthy of an MVP. That doesn't mean they'll never win the World Series again. I mean, that's very close to a total win-win.
Completely. Like, and you know what? What is an MVP? Neither Ryan Howard or Jimmy Rollins are in the Hall of Fame. And Chase Utley's the only one of those three that has a shot.
And he should
And
have
he
won
didn't
an MVP.
Win yeah. an MVP. It doesn't matter. It's an award to make the baseball player feel good, and, you know, to make the team feel good, and for them to crown a subjective winner. Because you know what'll still exist in the future? Lists of averages and triple slashes and all the stats. Someone who's going to look back at this season is going to look and see, hey, Austin Riley was pretty good for this team that won the World Series. That's great.
Hey, I said at the beginning of the season, if the Braves want to replicate their success from 2020, they're going to need great seasons again from Austin Riley, from Travis d'Arnaud, and from Dansby Swanson. Swanson and d'Arnaud weren't able to replicate that success, but Riley was. And hey, good for him. That's what helped pilot the Braves to their World Series title. I will also say that Zach Wheeler got 6 points in the MVP as well.
That's outstanding.
Had the highest wins above replacement of any candidate who was voted upon with 7.7. So, yeah, it's just worth mentioning as well.
The Phillies had good players, And they had two of them exactly. And that's kind of the problem because no one else was ready to make that leap. And it's so frustrating. It's frustrating in the long run. They didn't have to win the World Series, but it would have been nice for them to get a little farther than October 3rd this year.
Honestly, it would have looked worse for the Phillies to have both the Cy Young winner and the MVP and not even made the playoffs.
And be this, it would be embarrassing. I would end up writing something. That would be a column waiting for me to write it on Yahoo. I would take great joy. I would take great joy in it. I wrote the Harper post, the MVP post for Yahoo.com. You can go to sports.yahoo.com/MLB and that should pop right up for you. Please give it a read.
Well, before we get into what you've been waiting for, which is, of course, the thing we do on Continued Success, where we now go back and look at Phillies from the last rebuild era and just kind of try to give you information on two randomly selected Phillies from what we call the Mason jar, named for Roger Mason, perhaps shines a new light on players we saw the names of over the last 10 years who perhaps you remember and perhaps you don't. But before we do that, like I said, we're going to take another break and we'll talk to you about, that's right, Taylor Featherston and Reggie McClain right after this. Well, now that we got all that current Phillies stuff out of the way, we're going to go dive into the past that we complain about so much and do what we do on Continued Success. Just shine some light on some rebuild era Phillies. And this week we selected last week, Taylor Featherston and Reggie McClain from the Mason Jar. At the end of this episode, we'll pick two more names to talk about next week. But this week, I looked into Taylor Featherston. Liz looked into Reggie McClain. Liz, would you prefer to go first or second?
Depends on how interesting you think yours is.
It's not super interesting. I'm not going to keep people in suspense. It's Taylor Featherston. I've got some stuff you don't know about him, but I'm curious to see what you dug up.
All right, so Reggie McClain is definitely, he was on the team in 2020. He was on the team in 2020. He was on the Phillies. He was on the Phillies. He had been here's something you didn't know about him. According to Baseball Reference, his full name is Reginald Christian McClain.
Oh, that is interesting. I would not have guessed.
No, you could have given me 1,000 tries. And I would not have guessed his middle name is Kristen. I know they probably mean it. I thought, is this a misspelling of Christian? Nope, they mean Kristen.
Oh. I wonder what the origin of that is.
I know. Unfortunately, Reggie McClain hasn't been good enough anywhere to warrant one of those stories.
Oh, that is a bummer. He's just got the two major league seasons, and he only played in 5 games for the Phillies.
Yeah, 5 games for the Phillies. He played in more than that for the Mariners. He played in 14 games. He had 2 starts. And every time he faced the Astros, they kicked the shit out of him.
I'm going to say I would have guessed that, yeah.
Yeah, it's there, that was enough to make it into an article. But the most interesting thing you might remember about Reggie McClain is in 2019, he had an article written about him, about how he drove for Uber Eats in the offseason.
Oh.
Yes, I remember this. What year is it right now? That's not right.
It's a great question. And the answer is 2021. Yes, 2021. 2020. All right,
okay.
Cool. It's always good to remind yourself because I forget occasionally as well.
Indeed. So he was selected in the 13th round of the 2016 draft by the Mariners and spent 4 years in the minors. And because of that, this man had to drive for Uber Eats in the offseason. He's like, I never imagined that I'd be in the majors this year. And he was in the majors and it was not good. So that's really, it's just really an article about them, about how he's very surprised. It's really just in disguise, minor leaguers have it real hard.
Ah. Were you encouraged at all by what was the recent development that Major League Baseball will provide housing for minor leaguers?
Yes, it is maybe it's even slightly less than the bare minimum. It's not a great plan. It's something. It's a start. And one can only assume it can only get better from here if they're going to continue to pay for things.
Right. My thinking was, this is a great start, but I bet MLB thinks this matter is finished.
We're done. We fixed it. We fixed the minor leagues, everyone. We've fixed. It's all fine. Thanks for coming. He was acquired on waivers by the Phillies in before the 2020 season. Actually, that article about Reggie McClain was written in August of that year. And just a handful, August of 2019. And just a handful of months later, they let him go on waivers.
Ooh.
Yes.
Back to, well, I guess they were like, oh, he's got a backup job. We can let him go guilt-free.
In 2020 spring training, it was, he is battling for a spot. And no, he did not get a spot. I mean, the five games for the Phillies, if you think about it, you know, what it would have been in a 162-game season, that's a lot more. But I find it hard to believe they actually would have started him in any or put him in any more games. He was not very good for the Phillies at all.
Yeah, he wasn't. No. He was one of those guys that was in spring training and, you know, being a pitcher who was headed for the bullpen, you know, at best, it was like, well, you know, maybe there's something here. This is a guy who showed something at some point. So, you know, maybe this is a reclamation project that'll work out for the Phillies. And like many others, it just didn't.
Yeah. He was selected by the Yankees in the Rule 5 draft.
Oh, no shit. Yep. I don't think I realized that.
Nope. No, you wouldn't. And so I'm trying to figure out, because this was the season where spring training was stopped at a certain point. Because he appeared in just one Grapefruit League game. And I think he ended up in, you know, their minor league, what is it, the taxi squad? For the Yankees and did not come up. They did not bring him up at all. And all I can tell is he's still there. There's really nothing interesting about him other than someone on the Mariners implied that the Yankees, Astros were tipping pitches and the Astros were taking advantage of it.
Ah, come on, Reggie. Against the Astros, no less. You know, if you just eat, it doesn't take much.
I love that. It's like they had to be. Look at how bad I was every time I faced them and them specifically. It's not that they have a lot of good players and I'm secretly garbage.
It's not a secret. Wow. Poor Reggie.
Yes.
Well, one thing I think that I like to do like that I like to talk about these guys is the reason that like they got to the major leagues. Like to us, they were just kind of lousy and forgettable. But like at a certain point in their lives, they were hot shit. They were the biggest fish in the pond. They were the all-star in their community. Like they were the stud headed to the big leagues and they got to the big leagues.
Yeah.
And that was a thrill as well. And I think that's the case with Taylor Featherston. In Featherston, we have another guy who was the crux of his college team. And as a sophomore at TCU in 2010, they said that when he was on, the team was on. One of his coaches said, when Taylor Featherston plays with confidence, he's as good as anybody in the country. So like, I know that nobody said that about Taylor Featherston when he was a Major League Baseball player, but I just like to remind us, I don't know, of that, that like at one point these guys were great. And that's a testament to how difficult the major leagues are that a lot of guys who are great natural baseball players just don't work out there. And a lot of them played for the Phillies for the last 10 years. described as high energy by the Fort Worth Telegram, Featherston was said to be so aggressive that when he was struggling, it was because he wasn't letting the game come to him. I guess that means he would grab the ball from the pitcher, throw it on the ground, and field it himself, and throw to first. In one game against Air Force, Featherston's Horned Frog teammates ran up the score, winning 20-6 in game one of a doubleheader in which Featherston had 5 RBI. They clobbered them again in game two, belting 12 home runs on the day.
College baseball is not fair.
They had to cut the second game short in the seventh inning due to travel obligations. So they didn't even do a full game.
They had been hitting so many home runs that they lengthened the game to the point that they actually just eliminated them from contention.
They called a game on account of, hey, I gotta go.
We can't listen. Kicking your ass is taking a real long time. Taking a really long time. We gotta go. So we're just gonna imagine that we did kick your ass for the rest of the game, but the score gets to say exactly where it is. So we're gonna go.
You guys just hang out on the field, add a run to the scoreboard every 2 or 3 minutes. The experience will be the same.
It'll be the
same. Then you just take off. We're going to hop on a plane and go play a better team.
It's I don't college, know what, it might be. It's almost certainly a bus.
I don't know when he broke his thumb that year, but it didn't seem to be bothering him too much, given, again, the 5 RBI in that game and the 3 more in the next one. In addition to skill, Featherston had leadership his coaches liked to see. He once called a team meeting after the 5th inning of a game in which TCU was down 2-0 because he wanted the lineup to rethink its offensive approach. He was a sophomore at the time. Imagine that, just being the sophomore in the dugout and calling a meeting in the middle of a game to be like, hey.
Oh my God.
And I mean, it worked. Like, they weren't like, whoa, this kid. They were like, okay, sorry, Taylor.
I don't understand that. I mean, I guess, listen, I have never been on a sports team. I don't understand how that culture works. But even that, that seems extreme. But again, college baseball was real weird.
I would say that it becomes, as with little experiences I have being on sports teams, I would say it becomes pretty clear pretty quick who the best players are. And there's, you know, they might not gravitate naturally towards a leadership position, but there's sort of an intrinsic leadership role given to them, whether it's spoken or unspoken. And in Featherston's case, it was apparently spoken. And like, players are going to listen to a guy who knows exactly what he's doing out there.
Well,
and
confident, again, at least confident enough to be like, all right, I think this needs to happen, because that's a confident guy.
Right. And that's literally what the coaches said about him. Like, he plays with confidence, and when he's on, the team is on. So once you know that guy's your pilot, he can say whatever he wants in the dugout and people are going to listen. So the next year, after bouncing back from a knee strain and that thumb injury, Featherston was picked 168th overall by the Rockies, 2 picks ahead of Mookie Betts. I love drafts. I love draft lists.
I love them too.
He graduated from each level of the minor league system, affiliate by affiliate. In August of 2013, he was with the Modesto Nuts. And from August 3rd to August 25th, he hit .419 in 20 games. A local news anchor called him a raging inferno.
Ooh.
Yeah. He played next to Trevor Story on the left side of the Modesto infield. And in 2013, he was coming back from a broken hand the previous year. And this year was battling back from an oblique strain that he said felt like he was being stabbed in the back.
Ow.
Yeah. In his first plate appearance in Modesto, he was hit by the ball, then went on to log 3 hits in that game and score 2 runs. It was a game the Nuts lost 6-4 after tying it up with an unlikely rally from the offensively starved lineup, and saw Featherston's team get runners on third with no outs for 2 straight innings and not score. In one instance, Featherston dinked a little squeaker in front of the plate and the catcher tried to squash it, but it slipped out from under him and Featherston was safe at first. This led to the other team's manager coming out and screaming and getting ejected. The next inning, Then the opposing pitcher got the outs he needed to not let the run in. And then he yelled something at the Modesto dugout. And when they yelled back, he took a step towards the dugout. And then he was ejected.
My God. So
this was like a very dramatic game. And the press wondered how the Nuts would react to a game like that. In his second game in Modesto, this is, again, Taylor Featherston's second game with this team. Their response was to be pounded 10-0. But he put up closer to average numbers in 2014. The Rockies left him exposed in the Rule 5 draft, and he was snatched up by the Cubs. That same day, the Cubs sold his contract to the Angels. And when the Angels traded assistant Phillies GM Howie Kendrick to the Dodgers, they had an opening at second base. That began a 4-way competition in spring training between Featherston, Josh Rutledge, Johnny Giovitella, and Grant Green.
Goddamn.
competition that was characterized by the fact this was characterized by the fact that they had all apparently become best pals.
That's adorable.
They were like, they're in the paper and they're all like, we're all rooting for each other. Like, this is great. You know, obviously we can't all get the job, but we'll all be excited because we all get along. So since they were considered all pretty close to each other in terms of production, Featherston had an advantage in that if the Angels cut him, they had to offer him back to the Rockies, even though Mike Socha said that wasn't going to impact the decision. But obviously it's going to impact the decision. Featherston and Givatella both made the squad, though Featherston was considered a utility infielder at this point, and he debuted in the majors on April 12th, 2015, going 0-3 with a strikeout in a loss. It was a transition getting used to suiting up next to Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, and other all-stars like future Philly Matt Joyce. He played solid defense for the Angels in 101 games, but his bat never caught up to the big leagues. Pedro Mora of the LA Times put Featherston at the center of the moment that he felt, and it turns out many other people felt, ended the Angels' season that year. Yeah, I don't think they really blamed him, but it was just that moment was considered the end. This is from Mora's story. On a muggy Sunday afternoon in September, the Angels led Houston by a run, with two men out in the top of the ninth inning. The stakes had not been higher all season, as a victory would bring the Angels within 2.5 games of the division-leading Astros. Rookie Carlos Correa drilled a fastball from Houston Street up the middle, and rookie second baseman Taylor Featherston dove to his right. He corralled the ball after one bounce, leapt to his feet, ready to throw the ball to first base, but the baseball would not leave his glove. The ball was hit so hard that it stuck halfway through the webbing on Featherston's mitt and stayed there. Correa reached base, and the Astros took the lead in the next at-bat. The Angels' season never recovered.
All right, well, that's depressing.
That suck.
God damn.
He got to the ball. He got to the God ball. Damn. He stopped it. He did it. He made the play. It was just hit so hard.
It was hit so hard. Like, that's terrible luck. Like, that's one of those things, like, you got to start running.
Yeah, it's not his fault. Like, oh, man. Yeah. He did everything he was supposed to do. Like, overhand throw his glove with the ball stuck in it like guys do sometimes, but like, you know, he's getting up and recovering. He's barely gonna have time to make the play if he's able to get the ball out of his glove, let alone like quarterback a football, you know, to first base. That sucks. And like I said, this is a moment that is firmly stuck in the minds of Angels fans, I believe, and one recalled fondly by Astros fans. Matt Klentak's first trade as Phillies GM was with his old employer, the Angels, to acquire Featherston for a player to be named later and cash. The Inquirer and Daily News in Philadelphia both used the same Matt Gelb write-up to announce the deal, and the Inky headline called him an infielder, and the Daily News outline called him an outfielder, but then described him as playing second, short, and third, none of which you'll notice are in the outfield, unless you're playing them really wrong. In any case, at this point, Featherston's rep was that he was a solid defender and a poor hitter. It was a low-profile story both here and in Southern California, where he was being traded from. Further along into the spring, the Morning Call in Allentown said to keep an eye on Featherston, as Klentak must have seen something he liked in him while he was with the Angels. This was clearly a point in time when Matt Klentak's judgment wasn't the punchline it is now. In 2016, Featherston played in 99 games for the Iron Pigs and 19 for the Phillies. That's his Phillies career. He hit .115 with a .332 OPS. In 28 plate appearances, he had one extra base hit and one RBI. They were Taylor Featherston numbers. He put about the same numbers for the Rays when they purchased his contract from the Phillies the following winter, and did the same for the Twins and Royals, for whom he played in the minors until 2019. I found a tweet from the Baron, Larry Shank, from this past September. I don't know what he was referencing. I mean, I get what the overall reference is, but like, I don't know why exactly he did this, but he simply tweeted, "Good night, Taylor Featherston, wherever you are."
Poetry.
Not being like, you know, aware of the context of that, I don't know what he was doing.
That's
but
poetry.
But he mentioned him. And yeah, and that was Taylor Featherston's Phillies career. Well, hey, like I said, these are guys from an era that, you know, oh, the new GM's here. Oh, his first deal is to acquire Taylor Featherston from the Angels. I feel like we're beyond that, and we're seeing a front office get reconstructed and rebuilt with somebody who apparently has a plan. I think you're right. I didn't think about the repercussions that bringing in all these new guys into critical roles would have on Joe Girardi's job and the fact that his contract will be up soon. So, you know, I think you're right that you may see some shifts there. But overall, Phillies have the NL MVP in Bryce Harper. They had a Cy Young contender in Zach Wheeler. Hopefully these aren't the last times that those two guys specifically are held in such high regard on the senior circuit. Hopefully guys like Rhys Hoskins can come back. Hopefully the Phillies make some free agent signings and maybe even a trade or two that improves the team in the way that Dave Dombrowski said they need to improve. But I think it is important that some of their core deficiencies are being addressed by getting everybody who's being brought in to be on the same page into critical roles within the organization as far as player development and evaluation go. It's very early in the offseason. We've still got a labor dispute ahead of us. But at the moment, like I said, feeling juiced. I was feeling juiced coming into today's episode. And I feel like we can be, at least for a couple of days. So, hey, it's the Phillies. You know, you never feel good for too long. But at the moment, right now, I'm encouraged.
Pick new names.
Oh, yeah, I got to pick new names. We will end today's episode of Continued Success with new names from the Mason Jar. Stick my hand in here and burr, 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 burr. First name, that's a blank piece of paper. Why'd I put that in there? First name. Well, that also represents somebody who probably played for the Phillies in this era. So fair enough. All right. Oh, no.
No.
Come on. First name out of the jar this week, Brandon Workman.
Oh! No!
God damn it. At least we're going to get to know him a little better.
Sure.
Second name. Oh my God! Are you fucking kidding me?
What?
Heath Hembree!
No! No!
What? This is going to be hard to convince people it's not scripted. I took one off out of the perimeter and one out of the middle, and they were both, oh my God, these two, part of the same trade. Ah, for fuck's sake. Well, guess what, folks? If you haven't heard or thought enough about fucking Heath Hembree and fucking Brandon Workman, next week's third segment will be all about those two fucking guys. So gird your loins. Anyway,
we do not recommend listening to that part of the podcast sober. We do not.
Christ.
We do not endorse that.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Continued. That disgusted grunting sound signals the end of another episode of Continued Success. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, The Journey Ending with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk. We'll have a new episode up before Thanksgiving, so you can listen to it on the way to Grandmama's house. And head on over to the Patreon at patreon.com/hiddenseason. You'll find a new episode of Absolutely Hammered after the weekend. And currently, you'll also get access to, for $5 a month, you'll get access to John just posted his recent appearance on WIP on there, in which he got to talk about the Phillies. Me and Liz have a new movie review that will be appearing on the 22nd. We watched 42 and talked about it for almost 2 hours. That's where you can get new episodes of Absolutely Hammered with me and Chris Jones whenever they are published. We also have a new Dirty Inning Hit and Run up there that talks about after Buster Posey's retirement was announced, we went back and looked at his career, which was made up almost entirely of singling the Phillies to death. So all that stuff is over on the Patreon. It's worth listening to. Hey, the Phillies are a hot, hot item right now. So if you just can't get enough, we will gladly take your $5. I think that's more than a fair price to get all the content I just mentioned. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time on Continued Success.